We're at the towards the end here of Genesis 22. We'll be moving into chapter 23 here in just once we finish 22, we'll get in chapter 23, which I expect should be today. The next couple chapters here, 23 and 24 especially, we'll be moving through those a little bit quicker, I imagine, just because of the subject matter of those texts. There's not as much for us to dwell on as there was like here in 22. Such a lot going on here. A very significant chapter. So Abraham had offered Isaac his son, and we've talked about all these things. We talked about all the spiritual concepts here in the text, and there as a replacement of the ram is offered there on the altar instead of Isaac, and the Lord provides on the mount of the Lord. We see in verse 15, it says, "Then the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, 'By myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son. Blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. In your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice.' So Abraham returned to his young men, and they arose and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt in Beersheba." So this, we got into this just a little bit before we closed out last time. We have, of course, any time that God is going to speak the covenant, recite the covenant, is a significant moment. And each moment that God does this with Abraham, it has been a significant point in his life. And here once again we have another significant point as Abraham has kind of gone through the motions and has in this great test of his faith. And he has come out of the fire refined as pure gold, and he has, in a figurative sense, he has offered up his son, his only son, and this, and so God repeats the covenant that he has made with him, in that in his seed all the nations of the earth would be blessed. And so that repetition of that covenant, that restating of that covenant to Abraham, showing that, of course, God has not forgotten this covenant. He never will forget this covenant. And this is going to happen. So notice that I mentioned this as we were closing, verse 16, when he says, "By myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing, have not withheld your son, your only son, blessing I will bless you." And you see that it is contingent, and that not just Abraham's, the covenant God made with Abraham was contingent, but the covenant that God will make with Abraham's children will be contingent as well. Which is very, very clearly laid out in the Law of Moses. You look at the last two chapters of Leviticus. You look at Deuteronomy 26. These chapters are very specific to show that the covenant can be broken, and if the covenant is broken, then the promises fall through as well. So, and many of these promises that God had given to Israel, to the to the children of Abraham, that did fall through for them because they fell out of the covenant and they broke the covenant. They lost the land. God promised them the land, and they promised them that everything would be great in the land, but that was contingent on if they would be faithful to him. And they weren't faithful to him, and so they ended up losing everything. They lost everything, everything except their lives, at least those who still lived and survived. The vast majority of them died in war and bloodshed. And so you have just a small remnant there about 500 years before, 500-600 years before the coming of Christ, where you just have, we're left with a remnant. And even they weren't in Israel anymore. They were removed from the land that was promised to them. They were removed entirely from that land. So most of them died, and a few were taken captive away from the promised land. So we see a good lesson there on the importance of faithfulness to the covenant, faithfulness to our relationship which has been formed between us and God by the covenant. So Abraham was really no different, and his faith shown here in this text, God is highlighting that because this is the way you are, because of this faith in which you have shown in obeying my voice and trusting me, because you're trusting me and not your own ways, not your own thoughts, not your own ideas, but you trusted my way, even though my way seemed rough and seemed difficult for the time being when I told you to give up your only begotten son, to trust my way. Because you have trusted, the covenant stands, and it stands here with the blessing of him and his descendants, and blessing all nations of the earth with salvation is what he's getting at there. It's a promise of the coming Messiah. So the last little paragraph there of Genesis 22, it looks like it doesn't seem to fit in anywhere, but it absolutely does, especially if we were reading through this, all the way through, we would find out, really not in the next chapter, we'd find out in the chapter after that chapter that this last paragraph here in chapter 22 actually serves a purpose. But if you're looking at it just secluded here, you'd wonder what in the world was going on. But what is happening here is, the text is setting us up for the marriage of Abraham's son, Isaac. And we have a little bit of a family tree discussion of who he is going to marry, even though it doesn't come right out and say, this is what's going on and this is who he's going to marry. We'll find that out later on. So if we look at it here quickly, in verse 20, and now it came to pass after these things that it was told Abraham, saying, indeed, Milcah also has borne children to your brother Nahor, Huz his firstborn, Buz his brother, Kemuel, the father of Aram, Chesed, Hazo, Pildash, Jiblath, and Bethuel. And Bethuel begot Rebekah. And so there's our connection. Those who know who Isaac married, it's Rebekah. It says, these eight Milcah bore to Nahor, Abraham's brother. His concubine, whose name was Ruma, also bore Tebah, Gaham, Thahash, and Maaka. So, and I've got 99% of those wrong in pronouncing them, but you get the idea. Just be glad I didn't call on you to read that paragraph, all right? Just be happy with what you got. So, here's the thing. Why is this here, and why not later on with Isaac? I think it was in that paragraph. There was one little statement within that paragraph that that causes us, I think, to see why this is the fitting spot for this statement. And that's back in verse 20. Came to pass after these things that it was told Abraham. So this isn't just a tidbit of information from the Holy Spirit. This is happening in the sequence of time here, that this was told to Abraham. Now, how he was told this information, I don't know. Somebody told him the information. And this is significant because Abraham is seeing his family growing over in the land which he left long ago. He's seeing that family growing, and him being told this information is vital because he knows that his family is alive and well and thriving back in the old country. And this helps his frame of mind as he prepares for the marriage of Isaac, and he doesn't want Isaac marrying anybody around. He doesn't want him marrying, you know, any of these foreigners, any of these Canaanites or anything like that. He wants Isaac to be marrying in that family tree, in this people, the people which Abraham, the stock of Abraham, where he came from. So him hearing this information, I think, is really critical as he finds out that his family is alive and well and thriving, and they've grown and grown and grown. And so this is going to be important when he decides, I want Isaac to not marry around here. I want him to marry someone from the old country. Go ahead, Randy. That's a good point. Yeah, and it is. It is very interesting how all this is working out, and how this little paragraph is quite significant for the whole story. Even though when you read it here, it's attached, you know, to this situation of the sacrifice at the end of it, and it doesn't appear to make sense right off on the surface, but it is. It's here, and it's right here for a reason. It's in this spot for a reason, and it is setting the stage for how this whole family of Abraham, from not just Abraham but also his brother back in the old country in Chaldea, how as Brother Randy pointed out, how they also have an effect and play such a huge role in the formation of this family that would grow and grow and grow to be an enormous, enormous nation and people. So that's why we have that information there for us. That's put on a back burner a little bit as you get into chapter 23, because chapter 23 deals exclusively with the death and burial of Sarah. So, verse 1, it says, Sarah lived 127 years. These were the years of the life of Sarah. So Sarah died in Kirjath Arba, which is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. So, 127 years old. That makes Isaac 37 years old. With the passing of his mother, he is 37. This makes Abraham, at her death, it makes him 147 years old. And even though he's old, I don't want to spoiler alert, but you know, he still has some time left and some life in him, and he actually remarries. But we'll get to that later on. Now, Sarah 137, and she passes away in Hebron, in the land of Canaan. And it's interesting that the text brings out where she died, and it gets really quite specific, with where she dies. And the emphasis there is she died in the land of Canaan. You know, she died in the land that was promised to Abraham. That's where she lived, and that's where she died. Now, the rest of this text deals predominantly with Abraham obtaining a burial place for Sarah's body, and ultimately, in his mind, not just a burial place for her, but a burial place for his whole family, including him. And so, as time goes on, this will be their burial site. So, I think it's critical as we read this that this information is pretty important in terms of the promises of God. And I think everything we look at in Genesis, we've got to look at and ask ourselves the question, what does this paragraph, what does this chapter, what is the connection between this activity, this narrative, and the promises of God? And this is one of those texts where you read it and you say, okay, you know, it's a bit of an interesting story, an interesting narrative of Abraham obtaining a burial plot. What does it have to do? So I think what it has to do, before we go on to read it, I want us to read it with this in mind. I think this text is directly related to the promises of God, because Abraham and Sarah, their family burial ought to be in Chaldea. You know, that's where everybody else is. That's where that whole stock has come from, and that's where, you know, they would be buried. Traditionally, you know, that'd be more the expectation, is that Sarah would be buried with the rest of her family, you know, would be back in Chaldea. So it's significant that not only does Abraham bury her in the land of Canaan, but also that he purchases with his own money, this is the first plot of land that he owns. He purchases a piece of that promised land, and he buries her there. And this is the expectation, because it's not just her who's going to be buried there, but he as well and everyone else after him. He is setting the stage with this. This is really a chapter about a major decision in Abraham's life, a significant decision, as he's setting the stage of, this is our home, the land of Canaan. This is what God has promised to us in time to come. And so this is what we're doing. We are staying here. We die here, and we are going to be buried here. So he begins this trend and tradition. He begins this with Sarah and the burial of Sarah. So it is a text, again, you read the narrative, and there it is. It's really straightforward. But when we read it with the promises in mind, it's a text that is transformed into a text about Abraham's faith in the promises, his trust in what God has said to him about what this land is to be, and the blessings that will come much later in history. and Abraham, his faith to look forward to those things and not to place Sarah in the family tomb in Chaldea, but to buy a brand new plot of land and start a new beginning where the family is buried there in the land of Canaan. So it's a chapter of faith. It really is. Yep.
I mean, that kind of goes along with the Hebrews letter in chapter 11, verse 13. And Abraham included, mm-hmm. prior to the statement, he's all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off. And this, I guess, you know, this is evidence of that of Abraham, if you say, his faith. That this was going to be the promised land that didn't come into effect.
Yeah.
Far for him, but yet he had the faith here as he purchased his land.
Yes, absolutely. This is him as the writer of Hebrews is pointing out there. He was assured of it and he embraced it. Mm-hmm. And this is Abraham embracing. It's an excellent point. So. He embraces those promises of God by burying his own here in the land of Canaan. So let's go ahead and read through this and see a few things. Verse 3, then Abraham stood up from before his dead and spoke to the sons of Heth, saying, I am a foreigner and a visitor among you. Give me property for a burial place among you, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. And the sons of Heth answered Abraham, saying to him, Hear us, my lord, you are a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our burial places. None of us will withhold from you his burial place, that you may bury your dead. If you stop here for a moment, there's a number of things that we learn about Abraham and his character and about his reputation. I think that's an interesting little point in the text. First of all, notice Abraham in verse 4. This is really significant. He has lived here for a very long time, a number of decades. He has lived in the land of Canaan. But what does he say? I am a foreigner and a visitor among you. So this is very significant, and as Brother Bruce already brought up, Hebrews 11 brings this to light as well, that Abraham always dwelt in tents, and how that was different, and that wasn't normal. It's not that everyone dwelt in tents. They dwelt in cities. They dwelt in permanent, more permanent built homes. But it says that Abraham dwelt in tents by faith. That was an action of his faith to live in a tent. So there's so many things at play here with Abraham, as you have, this is the promised land, but it really hasn't been given to him yet. God's only promised the land. It's not his, it's not his for the taking. Not here, not now. But God has promised the land. And so he remains in this perspective as he confesses himself. I am a foreigner. I am a visitor. All right? Which is, a little bit opposite of this concept of him wanting to purchase land and bury Sarah there and everybody else later on. Then there's a lot of spiritual connotations to that that we just won't get into it for the time being. But at any rate, you look at the sons of Heth in verse 5 and 6, and you see how they respond to Abraham when they say, you're a mighty prince among us, you may bury your dead in the choicest of our burial places. So you see his reputation. they love him. You know, they love him, they respect him, they revere him and honor him. They call him a mighty prince among us. And that just shows us what tremendous character that Abraham had, and the way that he showed himself to everyone else for them to respond this way. And they allow for Sarah to be buried in their choicest, you know, in their best burial places, the places along with the other princes and the other kings. And how significant is that? Is you know, you've got a foreigner dwelling in tents out there. I mean, and his wife passes away. Of course, she cannot be buried, you know, with the choice, with the elect, with the princes, and you know, princesses, and you know, all that. But with Abraham, it's different. They say, "You are a mighty prince among us," and they truly do look at him in that way when we see them offering their choicest burial places. And but this really isn't, I don't think, you know, what Abraham has in mind here. He doesn't want for her to be buried with and among the sons of Heth in their good places. He wants his own place. And so we see in verse 7, it says, "Then Abraham stood up and bowed himself to the people of the land, the sons of Heth, and he spoke with them, saying, 'If it is your wish that I bury my dead out of my sight, hear me and meet with Ephron, the son of Zohar, for me, that he may give me the cave at Machpelah, which he has, which is at the end of his field. Let him give it to me at the full price as property for a burial place among you.' Now Ephron dwelt among the sons of Heth, and Ephron the Hittite answered Abraham in the presence of the sons of Heth, all who entered at the gate of his city, saying, 'No, my lord, hear me. I give you the field and the cave that is in it. I give it to you in the presence of the sons of my people. I give it to you. Bury your dead.' Then Abraham bowed himself down before the people of the land, and he spoke to Ephron in the hearing of the people of the land, saying, 'If you will give it, please hear me. I will give you money for the field. Take from it, and I will bury my dead there.' And Ephron answered Abraham, saying to him, 'My lord, listen to me. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver. What is that between you and me? So bury your dead.' And Abraham answered it to Ephron, and Abraham weighed, or listened to Ephron, and Abraham weighed out the silver for Ephron, which he had named in the hearing of the sons of Heth, 400 shekels of silver, currency for the merchants." So, let's keep reading verse 17. "So the field of Ephron was, which was in Machpelah, which was before Mamre, the field and the cave which was in it, and all the trees that were in the field, which were within all the surrounding borders, were deeded to Abraham as a possession in the presence of the sons of Heth before all who went in at the gate of his city. And after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, which is in Hebron, in the land of Canaan. So the field and the cave that is in it were deeded to Abraham by the sons of Heth as property for a burial place." So the text, as you see, gets pretty specific there, and a little bit of repetition, purposeful repetition, of course, as it plainly states and repeats, this was deeded to Abraham, and that it was not even a gift. The property wasn't a gift. Abraham purchased it, and he purchased it at full price, even though it was offered to him for free. But no, Abraham paid full price for the land. He got the cave in the land, which the whole family would be buried, was to be buried. He got the all the surrounding land, the surrounding borders, and there's an interesting little tidbit there also in verse 17, as it's describing all that was deeded to Abraham, that he also got all the trees that were in the field. I don't know what to make of that exactly, but it's a fascinating little statement. It's all his. You know, it all belongs to him. He paid full price for it. It was deeded. It was deeded. It was deeded. And the text is making emphasis there that Abraham, in his mind, in his faith, he is not setting roots by any means. He will not set roots. That's because what God has promised him is something that was not there, not right there, not right then, but it was a promise for a later date. And so he wouldn't set up roots. But his purchase of this land is significant also by his faith. Go ahead. That's true.
Rights can be withheld.
Yeah.
So you have certain, you own a piece of property to do certain things with, but you can't do everything.
Yeah, good point.
You know, he got basically everything deeded over to him, so it belonged to him. Nobody else had a share in it.
That's a good point. I like that. Randy, did you have something? Oh, okay. Yes, go ahead.
Do you honestly? It sounds like he might have with the money that it was worth, but we don't know. Abraham was not a man, it didn't appear like, because when he offered Lot, his nephew, the choices of the fields and the valley of Canaan, if he chose Sodom, Lot chose the area of Sodom and Gomorrah because of the green grass, the pasture, and everything for the herds, Abraham wound up in the mountains.
Yeah.
So,
right.
And so I think this too shows Abraham's humility as far as he wasn't looking for things that were priceless. He said,
I agree.
400 shekels between you and me.
Yeah.
So obviously, to the man that sold it to him or allowed him to buy it, because it was all good for free, but it all comes into place. You know, over in Acts chapter 5, Stephen, when he was addressing the council, brought all of this up.
Good point.
And pointed that out.
Yeah, excellent points, and I certainly agree. I don't think this was, you know, they offered him the choice, the choices of our burial places, but this was not a part of their burial places. So I think Abraham here, he has gone a different direction, and that he hasn't gone to their burial places, that he has. He's cutting it alone at this new property.
Look here, it says not only Sarah was buried there, but also Rebecca, Jacob, and Leah. But Rachel alone, of the great patriarchal family, was not buried here.
Because Leah was the one who was.
Yeah, good point. All right, well, we're out of time, but we closed at a perfect spot. So next time around, we'll begin in chapter 24.